Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, everybody? This is John Bush from Armored Saint, and you are listening to Talking Metal. Turn it up.
Hey, guys, before we get into the episode, I just want to let you know I'm going to be playing down voicemail messages on a future episode of Talking Metal, so call me right now and leave a message, and I will play it and talk to you about whatever your comments are on a future edition of Talking Metal coming up real soon within the next couple weeks. The number to call me at is 973-757-1917. That's 973-757-1917. Also, follow me on Twitter. Two accounts going. We've got @Strigl, S-T-R-I-G-L, and @TalkingMetal. All right, cool.
Welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast, home of all things hard rock and heavy metal. I'm Mark Strigl, host and producer of this show since 2005. Now, let's get things started with the Talking Metal theme song, written by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of the Talking Metal Podcast. My name is Mark Strigl, and that song you heard right there was Rob Halford, Metal Mike, the great Roy Z doing the Talking Metal theme song. And you know, in the intro, I always say it's written by those guys, but it's obviously played by those guys too. So I probably should have said written and performed by Rob Halford, Metal Mike, and Roy Z, because obviously that is them playing that song. It comes from the Fuse TV show that we did. They wrote that song for us. Then Fuse got in a little spat with Rob Halford's manager, so we ended up only using it, I believe, in one of the like 8 shows, which is unfortunate because it was a great song. And you know what? We use it here because we don't give a shit here on Talking Metal. And big thanks to Rob Halford and Metal Mike for doing that for us. And sorry that it ended in a little spat between the manager, who has since been fired by Rob Halford, and Fuse over literally like a couple grand. Yeah, so there you go. That's the story with that song. And I need to change these intros up. I'm kind of sick of that intro myself. I'm sure most people just fast forward through it. One thing I'm not sick of is this song right here. It's called Which Way to Radioland by Sean Baker. We're going to check it out here on Talking Metal. We're going all over the place as far as our metal diversity goes, our hard rock diversity goes. Today we got John Garcia from Caius. He's going to be talking with us. We got John Bush from Armored Saint. He'll be talking with us, so stay tuned for those new interviews here on Talking Metal. And again, right now, this is Which Way to Radioland by Sean Baker. Saint. This is Can You Deliver, a little vintage old school Armored Saint. I bought this record at a strip mall in LaGrange, Illinois. I had, I believe I'd seen the video for this song, I believe, on somewhere weird like Friday Night Videos or MV60 or something in the Chicagoland area. Went out, checked out the album cover, looked cool enough. And that was it. I bought it and I loved it. And I especially loved the Delirious Nomad record, which my friends, when I was in high school, they actually bought that for me for my birthday, which was very cool. And it meant a lot because, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends in high school, and I thought it was very cool that they bought me that record, and I just loved the Delirious Nomad record. In a lot of ways, I liked it better than the March of the Saint record, the first record. But anyways, this is off that first record. This is Can You Deliver by Armored Saint, and then we will hear from John Bush from Armored Saint. He gave me a call the other night, and it was great to talk with him. So here we go.
Can you deliver? Question. Think that you'll pull through. Do you know what love means? A person fills you. Don't put the thought around me. I'm coming from above.
Hey, it's Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and calling in on the line, we have John Bush from Armored Saint. John, how are you?
What's up, Mark? How are you, brother?
I'm good. Glad to talk with you tonight, and very excited because we have on February 24th coming out on Metal Blade, the new live record, which you just told me how to pronounce it. And I'm
want me to say it again?
Yeah, say it again.
I don't even know if my Latin is proper, but it's Carpe Noctem.
Carpe
sees the night.
Okay, cool. And let's talk a little bit about the record. I heard a couple clips off of it, which sounded great. I heard Aftermath and March of the Saint on YouTube. It's a album and a DVD. I'm told, right?
Well, I know we have some live videos that are part of it, but I don't know if it's an actual combination package as far as for sale.
Right.
So some of the DVD, the videos are available eventually to see. For instance, I just saw the Last Train Home clip, and it looks great. And awesome. We've already released Aftermath as well. But it's not that's not part of the package, to my knowledge, at least. It's just a live record.
Right. Okay. I got you. Cool. So what other songs can we expect? Aftermath?
Well, there's Aftermath, which was actually the first video that we did. And then there's March of the Saint, which also came out or is coming out. Some of it was kind of, gave it to some of the people who were part of our pledge campaign, and they were able to see it first. And then Last Train Home, we also have the song Went Hands Down and also Mess from the last record.
Cool.
So that's five. Let me see it. I'm going over it in my head now.
Right.
Oh, Stricken by Fate, which is a classic Armored Saint song from the very beginning, from March of the Saint. So that's six. We also have Left Hook from Right Field, and the eighth song is Rain of Fire. So
nice.
There's eight tracks on it, which some people have complained is not enough, and we understand that. But the philosophy behind the small amount of songs is that it really was never meant to be a live record. Actually, what we did was we had a couple recordings, and we were releasing them for this Pledge Music campaign that we did, that basically helped us do the Queensryche tour that we just finished in November and December. And then once we put that out to them, to the Pledge members, then we realized, well, everybody should hear this because it sounds great. We're super proud of it. And, you know, it's an Armored Saint live record. It heard in the most proper of sense. So then that's when we put it out. So yes, it'd be great to have more tracks, and I'm fully in agreement with that. But you know, some of the songs that we had the recordings, because it was only from two, we just kind of felt like they weren't maybe up to snuff as far as our individual performances. So we said, well, these are the ones. So
right, gotcha.
We didn't have like 10 shows to base it on, and you know, it was really two. And if there was some flubs and things that were just, you know, not quite up to, like I said, up to snuff, we didn't want to put them out. So.
Gotcha. And so it's the songs are pulled from two different shows?
Two different shows, the Wacken Festival in Germany, and also a club show that we did in the city called Aschaffenburg.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, we're looking forward to hearing it, and we'll have it linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com.
It sounds awesome. We're real proud of it. We try to make a live record that sounded like all of the vintage live records that we grew up on, like Strangers in the Night, UFO, and Priest, Unleashing the East, and Kiss Alive, and, you know, those are like the classic live records. Thin Lizzy Live and Dangerous, you know, as far as we're concerned. So
right.
I think we finally kind of hit it. Like, I'm real proud of the performances on this.
Cool. What's the process in recording a live record? Do you bring all the individual tracks back and then mix it in Pro Tools, I'm assuming, or something like that?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, Joey mixed it, which he's an awesome engineer, really, in all ways. And, you know, he had some work cut out for him and making sure that, you know, some of the levels were right. And it's live. So, you know, you got things that are kind of loose. And Armored Saint's a loose band as it is. I mean, we really are. Which I think is, you know, at this point, it's a cool aspect because everything is so perfect. And we're not. But I think that's what we make it sound live and raw and real. And so, you know, there's a little bit of Joey's magicianship that is involved in making it all work, but he did a great job.
Yeah, definitely. The tracks I heard sounded very full and awesome. And again, February 24th, the new live Armored Saint record will be out on Metal Blade. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago, I guess middle of 2015, that you guys just put out just a great studio record, which was your first album back since 2010, Win Hands Down. I would suppose it's probably too early to think about another studio record. Is that correct?
Well, it would be when we're talking about Armored Saint, I guess, since we don't move in the most rapid of ways. But, you know, it's in my mind. I'm sure it's in Joey's mind. I'm sure it's in the other guy's mind. We were extremely proud of Went Hands Down. We think we made a really great record that sounds like a classic Armored Saint record, but at the same time, it sounds like a record that's modern as well. And and came out now instead of 1987. So we're real proud of that. And, you know, we would love to kind of continue on with that kind of vibe. But at the same time, you know, I've said this on a couple of occasions that for us, it's, I'd rather make a record and have a bunch of great songs and have that be the catalyst to do something, contrary to, we got some momentum and we're doing well and we've just did a bunch of tours and probably the most dates that we've done in years. So let's put it on another record so we can keep doing that. That's
right.
That to me would be the wrong approach for Armored Saint. You know, certainly that might work for certain bands and you know, I get it because these days touring is you know one of the best ways and kind of one of the few ways that people can make money. But for us, it's more about making a quality record, and then once we do that, then you know the show aspect of it is like, hey, we can go, let's go play some gigs now, kind of thing. So that's really the primary objective, and I think that if we feel like we have a good idea for a record and have some great ideas, then we could do that, and that's kind of where my mind is. I haven't really worked on anything. I don't know if Joey has, honestly. But, you know, I certainly, if we're going to make a record, I think that, you know, unfortunately, time is not completely on our side in
right.
terms of waiting around because, you know, I make the joke, like, singing Rain of Fire when I'm in my mid-60s might be a tall order.
Yeah.
It is now, you know, in my
yeah.
early 50s. So it's not like I want to really wait around too long and do things, although we could continue to just play shows. And we certainly have a large catalog of songs that we can dive into and mix up our sets. So it's not like the same old story because I hate that. But you know, if we can come up with a cool vibe and some great song ideas for a record, then sure, I want to make a record. You know, I think we just have to probably have the discussion about it and see if there's something churning there.
Right.
I don't want to overthink it, and I don't also want to. You know, sit around and kind of be meticulous about what we're going to do because that's not really our way either. But I do think it, you know, merits a conversation at least and come up with something that we think is maybe the direction if
right.
we're going to do it.
Cool. Now, you know, Joey stays busy with a lot of other stuff like other bands and recording and stuff when Armored Saint is not active. What stuff keeps you busy when you're not doing Armored Saint?
As unexciting as it may sound to the average metal music fan, I have a business that I have with my wife where I'm involved in as a casting studio that she's had for years, and I've also kind of involved myself in it, well, for a long time now, but that's it. You know, we do that, and it's a good little mom and pop business that helps kind of pay the bills and have fun and have a nice life. And I'm also a father, and I'm pretty involved in my kids' life. And
cool.
You know, sometimes I'm just driving my kids to hockey, you know.
Yeah.
So still cranking rock and playing, you know, cool music, especially for my kids, because they, you know, I try to make sure that they listen to the proper music, in my
right.
opinion. So
cool.
not get them exposed to some of the awful pop music that a nine and 12-year-old might listen to or be exposed to. But, you know, we do that. And, you know, I've pretty much at this point given most of my musical attention to Armored Saint.
Right. Okay. And when you say casting company, so you're providing like actors to movies and commercials and stuff?
It's
like
primarily
that?
Commercials. We, you know, we cast actors. We, you know, we get hired by a production company or ad agencies, and then they say this is what we need for a commercial that we're going to make for, you know, whatever, Nissan, and then my wife is the casting director, and I assist her, and then work for other people there, and other casting directors work out of it as well. So then actors come in, you know, and audition for it, and that's the kind of the beginning process of how commercials are made.
Right on. You know, I have Spotify, and I wanted to ask you, I use it all the time, every day I'm listening to Spotify, and a couple questions about Spotify for you. I noticed all the Anthrax stuff with you, the stuff with Joey's on there, but the John Bush era Anthrax stuff sadly is not on Spotify. Any idea why?
Well, I don't know. None of it is?
No, nothing.
None of it is.
Nothing, nothing. Huh, and all the Joey stuff is there. But right. You go on iTunes, you can download it on iTunes.
Right,
like
right.
Your stuff is on iTunes, but not on Spotify.
I don't have an answer for that. Yeah. You know, the first two records, when we basically got the masters back from Elektra, that was part of the deal upon leaving, and those records are kind of licensed as we go kind of thing. And that's why there's sometimes an area of kind of uncertainty with those. And then the Volume 8 record was also a record that, you know, at the time we were together with a record company that's called Ignition that, you know, is no longer in business. So that's kind of a gray area as well. The We've Come For You All record came out on Nuclear Blast. So I don't, you know, they're a functioning label, so
right.
It should be available through that. But, you know, some of the ways our records have been handled in Anthrax as far as, you know, having them properly licensed and everything is just kind of, I don't know, it's not happening, as you can see.
Right.
And I would love to have those records be available. I mean, like, they are on iTunes, like we said. Yeah. If I go to Amoeba Records and I go through the Anthrax, you know, section, I never see any of the records I've made,
right?
Quite honestly, which is, you know, disheartening. I'm really proud of those albums, and I think we made some great music, and
definitely.
I certainly would like them to be available for people to check out. Like you said, on iTunes, you can download them or purchase them, but I don't know. I don't know why that's the case, and that's not the most positive thing if
right.
It's not there. That's a bummer.
What about Spotify in general? Do you think it's hurting the music business? Do you think it's a good thing?
You know, the whole streaming thing, I don't know that much about it. I know that, you know, I got a present for the holidays for, you know, the Alexa thing, and we use it in our house, and, you know, Alexa, play Armored Saint, you know, whatever. So, I mean, not that I'm doing that. I don't.
Right.
I'm not that narcissistic. But,
right.
You know, I was talking to Brian Slagle not that long ago, and he said that he feels like the whole streaming thing with music is going to eventually work itself out, and that's coming from him, who, you know, stands to lose with some of this stuff, and certainly with the record sales declining as they have. But he seemed pretty optimistic that it's not that far around in the future that they're going to iron it all out, and people will be, you know, getting properly paid for this, because, you know, quite frankly, the music business is just—it's been just hurt so badly.
Right.
It's been awful for it, and especially for artists and, you know, even labels and, you know, you name it. You know, it's just been a mess. So, I hope they fix it, because, you know, I don't really think that, I mean, if they don't, I don't see how people would eventually continue making music, because, you know, it costs money to make a product. It,
right,
you know,
sure.
This isn't something you just are, you know, churning out in the middle of the world here in this digital kind of limbo world. It takes effort, and it costs money to do this. Even if you, at the most simplistic of ways, you know, home studio, and, you know, you can do things like that, and it's great, and just kind of put it on to stream, and you know, it's great. But at some point, if you're not earning something for it, it's just a big nothingness, and that's a drag. So, you know, I see royalties, and, you know, I get statements, and believe me, sometimes it's a drag when you see, like, 2 cents and 3 cents, you know, it's like, okay, great. So, and I know that it should be bigger than that. It should be, because there's definitely lots of ways that people are able to access music, and I know they're listening to my music. Maybe not on Spotify, the Anthrax records, but in
right.
other ways.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, I hope they fix it and they work it out, and it would be nice.
Yeah, me too. You know, Armored Saint and so many other bands were a part of that L.A. metal scene, the early L.A. metal scene back in the 1980s, you know, and a lot of times when we think of that scene, we think of Rad and Motley Crue, but you guys were there too, and I was wondering if you have any memories that you could share from that scene back in the day before it kind of blew up and there were just, you know, millions of kids coming in from all over the country, you know, when it was a little more intimate, maybe back in the very early 80s, what was the scene like in general terms?
Well, it was awesome. It was, I'm super happy to be associated with that time because I think it was a real special time in heavy metal and, you know, LA in the 82, 83, 84, at least when we were a club band, was awesome. You know, we played with a lot of amazing bands who went on. Most of them had record deals and most of them did well with their record deals. You know, everyone from Rat, like you said, to Grey White, to, you know, Quiet Riot, to, you know, Steeler, to, Black and Blue. You know, it was, there's countless bands, Malice. I mean, almost everybody that came through LA at some way, in some way or another, had a record deal and had some kind of fame. Obviously some were bigger than others, of course, but, it was great. You know, we were part of that scene. And even though, you know, most of our influence was a little bit heavier and a little bit more based on European bands that we really were inspired by at the time, we still were in LA and we still were proud to be from LA. And, you know, we played with all those bands and all those bands and us got along very well. And we had great shows together. And, you know, we played the Troubadour countless times. That was still to this day is one of my favorite clubs in LA, the Country Club, which was out in the Valley that had, you know, had amazing shows, which I actually saw Anthrax playing with Raven, you know, with Neil Turbin back in 84, 83. We played there with Metallica, you know, right when Kill 'Em All was released. Just so many people, so many bands, so many cool venues, the Roxy. We used to make our own flyers. I used to have a job at the home office at Public Storage, you know, the main office of all the public storage sites. And so I had access to this really giant Xerox machine at the time, and we would just make, I mean, I probably again, well, that's not going to matter now, of course, right. But we'd make thousands of flyers, you know, for all our shows. And Dave Pritchard, you know, he was such an awesome artist as well as a great, great guitar player. And he would make these incredible flyers with pictures on it that had drawings at the same time. They were just really weird and unusual, especially for the flyers that were made at the time by other bands. And we would just pass them out everywhere. And we were all into doing that. And there's plenty of times that we went to the Troubadour where you parked across the street where most people did to go to the Troubadour. And there was times where we would go into that parking garage and everyone was partying in there. Wow. There was times where we would just not even go to the gig. It wasn't our gig. It was like somebody else's gig. But we, you know, and our objective was to pass out flyers and to kind of, you know, do some schmoozing or whatever. And, you know, we were partying and having a great time. And those times we didn't even make it into the club. We just hanging in the parking garage.
Wow.
So I have fond memories of that. And
cool.
It was a great time. It was an awesome time. And sometimes I think Armored Saints, most organic circumstances when we were our own manager and we were our own band. And before, you know, we were with Chrysalis Records and, you know, just kind of our world. And it's, you know, then of course, you know, you get a record deal and you get an agent and you get all these things. And, you know, of course, those are pivotal moments and big steps in your life. But sometimes I think when we had it just ourselves, it was probably the best as far as it just being the truest.
Right. So. Cool. Cool. Great stuff. One last question for you. You know, you mentioned Dave, and of course you lost Dave sadly back in, I think, 1990 to leukemia, and Jeff Duncan joined after that. But really, that's the only lineup change you've ever had. And how do you guys make it work? How do you stay together for so long? I mean, there's so many bands out there now where you have the drummer is the only guy or there's one person in the band.
Yeah.
What makes it work with you guys?
Well, you know, Phil did leave after Delirious Nomad. He was part of the writing process. And then after that record was out during the recording, he left. And then of course Phil came back on Cymbal. And Jeff was part of the writing process of Cymbal and then kind of left and then came back and, So that was a little bit of a weird area as far as his early associations with Armored Saint, although Jeff played in Odin, and Odin opened for Armored Saint as a troubadour in 1983 on a countless occasions, as well as Perkins Powell. So we were bonding with Jeff back then, too. But, you know, the four guys in Armored Saint, Jeff, Phil and Gonzo, who are, of course, brothers, and myself and Joey, we grew up in about a quarter-mile radius from one another in a little town in East L.A. called El Sereno, and here in Los Angeles, and we were friends and going to elementary school when we were like 8 and 9 years old.
Wow.
And so our relationship is over 40 years together as just friends beyond the band. And I do find it to be a real awesome circumstance that we are the same guys. I mean, obviously Dave is the one exception, and we miss Dave, and you know, I always feel like Dave is, his presence is there all the time anyway. And if he was there, then we would have to go for the Outlaws Maiden vibe and have three guitar players, because yeah. It would just be right. But of course, you know, he died a long time ago. But I think that's one of the beautiful aspects of Armored Saint. It is the same guys. You know, it's the same dudes who were part of just about every record, and you know, when these songs are played, it's not like, you know, yeah, I can learn that song. It's, I know that song. I'm part of that song, you know, and it's pretty rare, especially for a band that has been around as long as we have that, you know, it's the same guys. And I dig that, you know, I think it's a beautiful thing. So, you know, I don't know. It's funny. We get along quite better now than we ever did. Maybe it's a sign of maturity or just our old age.
Right.
You know, but I think everyone is respects everybody else and their space, and you know, we kind of know our roles, and everybody kind of just deals with that in the proper way. And you know, Armored Saint, it's the same dudes. It really is. So it's cool. I really I think that's one of the greatest aspects of the band.
Cool, absolutely. And on that note, we'll wrap things up, John. Thank you so much for joining us on Talking Metal.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, take care.
All right, have a nice night.
You too.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Made my bones bright. Are you with me out there? Time to mend your life begins. Pray for me. Make me feel I'm not alone.
Aftermath Live by Armored Saint, new Armored Saint off the new live record. Check that out. We'll have it linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. You can go over to Amazon and download that or buy the physical copy using our Amazon links. That, of course, helps us out, guys. We need support. We really do to keep this thing going. We're going through behind the scenes right now some interesting changes, which hopefully I'll get into coming up sooner or later. I don't know how they're all going to pan out for us here on the podcast. It's got me curious. A lot of stuff going on, a lot of talk, a lot of possible new paths for the Talking Metal show here. So I'll keep you posted as soon as I have some more definitive info, because I don't right now, and things are a little up in the air. And yeah, it's got me a little nervous about things. Hearing from you guys, getting your support, if it's a review on the iTunes, iTunes homepage that we have there, or a PayPal donation, or just simply using our Amazon links to link over to Amazon and go about making your regular Amazon purchases. All that is extremely helpful. Following us on Twitter, sending me a Facebook request to be my friend on Facebook is also great. I love connecting with you guys. And I appreciate everything you've done for us here on Talking Metal. John Bush, how great was that? I love talking with that guy. You know, I'd interviewed him actually once behind the scenes on Talking Metal. On That Metal Show, when I was the coordinating producer on the final season of That Metal Show. Got to interview him and Joey doing the backstage interviews before they went out and spoke with Don, Jim, and Eddie. I was a guy who did all the kind of online content with the guests backstage. So it was great talking with those guys then, but it was even better. I mean, John just really seemed like he was in a great mood on this phone call, more relaxed
than I feel he was when I had him backstage at that metal show, which is always, everything's all frantic and a little hectic because it's a TV show, you know? So anyways, I just really enjoyed talking with John this on this episode. So thanks for listening, and thanks to you, John. Please support Armored Saint. If you don't have the most recent studio album, definitely check it out. It's called Win Hands Down, and it is just an awesome record. And of course, this new live record will be out real soon, so be on the lookout for that too. Guy who I've loved since he was in Caius way back in the day, and you know, I really was a Caius fan. I kind of got into them at the tail end of their career. I'd gotten a free promotional Caius record when I was at working at VH1, and really dug them. And Tool started covering one of their songs, and then of course Queens of the Stone Age came along, and that, even because Nick and Josh were in Queens of the Stone Age, and formerly of the band Caius, that really caused me to go back and even dive deeper into the Caius catalog. And man, what a voice on their singer. Caius, of course, the lead singer of Caius, John Garcia. So much great stuff he put out back with them. And not only with them, just through the years. I mean, this guy has continued to have band after band after band after album after album after album. And, you know, he's not quite on the same level, obviously, as a guy like Josh from Queens of the Stone Age, who is out there filling really big theaters and playing to really big crowds and is able to make his living solely off of music. That's what Josh is able to do. John, it's a different story. And sometimes I mean, you got to have so much respect for a guy who goes and holds down a day job, but still is out there being an artist and giving us great, great art. I mean, I'm really impressed by this new acoustic record that John is putting out. And again, I went into it with reservations, knowing that he was redoing some of the old Caius classics. But when I heard them, wow, blown away. And if all you have ears for is sludgy guitars, big, you know, sludgy, loud guitars, this might not be the record for you, honestly. But if you are able to enjoy mellower style, more haunting style music, this is a real gem, this record. You know, kind of reminds me of, you know, Alice in Chains. They had the first two records came out, they were very heavy, and then they put out that Sap kind of acoustic record that was real haunting and stuff. Kind of a similar thing here. You know, John's doing a little bit, something a little bit different musically, and he succeeds in my book. So this interview starts off a little abruptly. You know, usually when I start my interviews, I'm like, hey, it's Mark from Talking Metal, and on the line we have blah, blah, blah. John just immediately started talking as soon as he picked up the telephone when I called him. And luckily I had already hit record, at least I think I hit record, right at the very beginning. You might miss the first couple words. I don't think so, though. But anyways, I didn't want to, just because he started really getting into it, like, from the get-go, I didn't want to, like, say, okay, John, now we're going to do the real interview. So I kind of just rolled with it. So just letting you guys know that. And it's a great interview. John Garcia, great guy. A little bit of hum or buzz on the phone line. I'm going to try to clean that out the best I can for you guys. But just letting you know, you might hear that a little bit. But nothing too bad. Nothing that'll distract from the interview. And on that note, let's go into some classic Caius right now, and then we will round things out by hearing some of John's new music off the new acoustic record that he has coming out, which is called The Coyote Who Spoke in Tongues. Again, this comes out next week, actually just in a few days. I think this actually comes out this Friday, so just in a few days. Check it out, okay? All right. Little old school Caius with Demon Cleaner here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with John Garcia from the band Caius now just going solo with you know, John Garcia is the way he releases this new record that's coming out. The acoustic record. He actually had one under just the John Garcia name a few years back, but yeah, so this will be the second record that he releases as John Garcia. But again, right now, Old School Caius here on Talking Metal, followed by my interview with John Garcia.
Sounds great. Yeah, really digging it.
Oh, thanks, man. You know, Mark, it's not for everybody, you know. People are accustomed to hearing, you know, fuzzed out, distorted out, you know, heavy duty, not super heavy, but rock music, you know, in general. And so I'm getting critiqued and criticized and, but I'm used to it. So it is what it is. And, you know, Aaron, I thought my guitar player did an incredible job showing the songs, some of these Caius cover songs, an incredible amount of respect. And it was great and actually an honor to work with him and writing some new material as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely there's a lot of to talk about here. You know, the Caius songs, the new material. Let's start right there. How much of the record is old Caius stuff reinvented and how much of it is brand new material?
Okay. So it's about almost half and half. We did four Caius songs. Three of them are cover songs, really. Brent Bjork wrote Green Machine. He wrote Gardenia. Those two songs, if you're familiar with those two,
sure.
They're hard, heavy, a lot meaner. So to do them on the opposite side of the spectrum, where they're much softer, it's just a totally different take. One, acoustically, and two, they're not even being played similar, with the exception of the lyric and the lyric melody. Challenging, something that I've wanted to do. Why? Just because I wanted to, really. As far as Space Cadet is concerned, that Caius cover written by Josh and Scott, I never really liked the take I did, as a 20-something year old, the original version, and this was my way of me kind of a little bit of self-redemption, if you will, for that track. El Rodeo, doing it acoustically was a challenge, along with Ronnie King on keyboards. And that song is just enjoyable to sing. Aaron and I wrote, Kylie, Give Me 250 ml, The Hollingsworth Session, Court Order, and there's another one from my debut track, which is live, debut record, which is live. It's called The Boulevard. So, it's not something that I wanted to, check off the bucket list. I'm, be 47 years old. I'm slowing down. Want to do acoustic record. Nothing like that. It was more of just because, I wanted to try some stuff acoustically live. It wound up working out really great. Aaron and I had a drink from the, from Europe on the way to the United States. And we said, why don't we do a record of pretty much our set? And that's exactly what it is, pretty much.
Cool. Now, to kind of break it down as far as the actual songs go, I mean, the remake of Gardenia, just haunting. I mean, when I heard that, because I have to admit, going into this, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready for acoustic covers of the Caius stuff. And I think Nick had done a couple acoustic covers of some Caius stuff, which I thought was okay, but it didn't really grab me that much. No disrespect towards him, but these, like the Gardenia one, as soon as that acoustic guitar came in with that just haunting sound, it really pulled me in. I mean, you mentioned really some of the stuff is just the vocal melody that's the same as the old Caius songs. How difficult was this to rearrange some of these older songs?
Mark, that was the enjoyable part of working it out. And that's exactly what we did, was just work it out. We sat down, with a bottle of vodka, and like we do in Aaron's
nice
place and Palm Springs, and we just started trying different ideas. And Aaron, along help, I've got to give credit where credit is due. A lot of some of these the slower version of Gardenia and Green Machine, that was really the tempo was really pushed by one of the producers of the record, Harper Hug. He just said, slower, slower, slower.
Right.
And we were kind of questioning it, and then after hearing it, we said, let's do it, but let's slow it down even more, and let's turn it into something completely and totally different. That was the enjoyable part of doing so. So it wasn't difficult. It was more of just working it out. Some songs we tried. Even Tangy Zizzle, we tried, which is an old Caius song. We tried that one. It didn't work out. Even an old Hermano song, it didn't work out. We went in the studio with, you know, close to 15, expecting and knowing that we'd only push maybe, you know, 8 or 9, you know, 45, 48 minutes worth of music. So we always go in with more, expecting ones just not to make it. So, but, you know, it, even though it was enjoyable, it's not something that we were accustomed to, going in the studio and recording an acoustic record. So we went in with a mindset of keeping it very, very simple. Three guitars, really. One nylon, one 12-string steel, one 6-string steel. And we kept it simple. There's some blending in there. There's some percussion, some bass, and, you know, some keyboards from this super badass guy by the name of Ronnie King.
Sounds like a little organ on Space Cadet. Is that
Yeah. There's a lot of different keys, some pianos, and a lot of different little percussion sounds that we kind of added for nuances and whatnot. But we kept it simple. We tried to keep it as simple as we could and let the music really speak for itself. And don't fill up the song with vocals. Let the song breathe. Let it hang. Let it do it. So, you know, again, Mark, I'm used to, you know, critiques and comments, and this record's not for everybody. It's not going to be a record that you put on a Saturday night and you open up a bottle of Jack Daniels and you rage and party to it. It's not it. More of, you know, this is more of you're driving down Route 66 and you want to throw on some tunes, and this is what it's there for. So, you know, it was a great experimentation and just being explorative, and that's exactly what it was. It was just us, Aaron and I, being explorative, and I think he did a great job. Aaron doesn't get enough credit for what he did, and I certainly want to, you know, let everybody know that who, you know, listens or reads this thing that that, you know, Aaron Groban is a huge part of the writing force, and we're continuing to write for the new Electric record. So we're already on to bigger and better things.
Wow. So there's an Electric record coming at some point down the road.
We're about 3/4 of the way done with it, and so we're just finding the time to, actually, that's always hard, finding enough time to go in and be with the guys. Everybody has families and full-time jobs, including me, so when we get a chance to go in there, we always jump at the opportunity. All of our spare time is devoted to it.
Nice. Cool. And the music video for Kylie is great. Total concept video, if you will. Were you involved in coming up with the storyline, the concept behind the video?
Actually, no. I was not. I wasn't even on set. I actually gave the palette to Douglas Quill, who directed some stuff for me in the past, and I love his eye. He wanted to, you know, address a couple some domestic violence, and then he threw in some sacrificial, you know, nuances in there with the girl escaping with her life, and you know, I let him have it. I let him have free reign, and I said, you know, Doug, I said, I don't know if you want, you know, some performance pieces in there. Just let us know. We're on call. We're ready for you. And anytime he needs to come up to L.A., but he wound up coming out here, didn't even know about it, and again, I just gave him free reign. I dig it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And, you know, we don't have time to touch upon every single song, but what's the Hollingsworth session about? What is that song actually about?
So, you know, Mark, I don't claim to be a poet by any means. And my lyrics are abstract.
Right.
So, you know, I try not to. Even Kylie will mean something obviously totally different to me than what Douglas Quill thought. So the Hollingsworth session really was. It's my grandfather's name. His last name. His name was Marshall Hollingsworth, and there was some feelings of family and him passing that went along with that song and how it evokes some memories with me and Marshall, So, you know, but I don't try to have, nor will I ever want anybody to say, this is what the song's about. Basically, if a song makes you feel, and hopefully some of these do evoke some feelings, of washing your day off, whether you had a horrible day or you want to escape, if only for 45 minutes, that's what this record's for. It's about leaving reality, if you will, and having it take you wherever it takes you.
Right.
So I try not to you know, let the cat out of the bag too much, but it does. There are some personal feelings in regard to that piece, but you know, I never. No one's asked me that question today. Today's been a press day, and nobody's asked me. So, you know, looking at some of what, you know, your questions are, me having to really kind of search for an answer, it's bizarre for me.
Right,
because sometimes I don't know how to answer some of these questions because I've never been asked, you know, what is this session about? Well, a session with my you know, dear grandfather Marshall Hollingsworth.
Sure.
So,
cool. Well, again, to my listeners, we are talking with John Garcia about the new album, The Coyote Who Spoke in Tongues. And, of course, we mentioned earlier one of the songs that is reinvented, remade, is the song Gardenia, an old Caius classic. And I think this new remake that you do is just a great version and very different version and haunting, like I said. That song, you know, I always thought it was a little odd, and I wanted to get your take on this. This is a kind of off the beating path question here. You know, your former bandmate in Caius, Josh, did a record with Iggy Pop not that long ago, and there was a song on the record, a different song than the old Caius song, called Gardenia, and wanted to get your thoughts on that. I don't know if you know that or if you had any insight to that. Is it just a coincidence or what?
You know, I don't know. I hear that record is great, and I've heard bits and pieces of that Gardenia song, but I don't think that there's any connection, honestly. That's a question for Iggy or Josh, but I personally would think that, and I'm not 100% sure that there's no connection. That's just a coincidence.
Right on. And you know, I saw you with Caius Lives twice, actually. I saw you in New York City, and then I saw you out in Montclair, New Jersey, and was really digging what you were doing with that band, kind of bringing us back to the Caius stuff. And I know after that you went on to Vesta Chino, which featured Brant and Nick. And do you hear from Brant or Nick much anymore? You're still in contact with them?
Not too much.
Right.
I think they're busy with their projects, and I know those guys are the real deal, you know, and music is their life. And that's all they do.
Right.
I don't stay in contact too much with them anymore, and I just wish them all the best. And you know, for me, I've got a full-time job. You know, I help run an animal hospital here in Palm Springs, and
oh, cool.
And you know, again, all my spare time is devoted to music. And but again, I wish those guys nothing but the best.
Right on. And, you know, through the years, you've had a lot of different bands that you've been in and been involved with. And I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago where you started releasing music under just your name, John Garcia. Has that been a easier thing for you to do, to not kind of have a band and be a solo artist and name? I know you're working with other people, but is there a benefit to just using your name and not having a band name?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One, I've always wanted to do it, and there's an incredible amount of freedom when it comes to the direction that, you know, I want to go to. If I want to, you know, listen to, you know, Kylie Tiella through a 6-band EQ versus a 12-band EQ, it's done. and there's no question there's producers involved that will maybe rule against it, but ultimately it's my decision. So I really enjoy the fact that and there's an incredible amount of freedom with it, and you know, I can do what I want to do when I want to do it, how I want to do it, you know, and it's liberating. So I like this path that I'm on, and you know, this acoustic record was a surprise, but it's just an ode to having that freedom and being able to do what I want to do. And there's no rules, there's no directions in regards to my life and or what songs I can and cannot put on a record. It's my God-given right to record and sing any song that I want to sing, you know, as long as I give where credit is due, and I do that. My path is very different than you know any other musician, but I'm still a fan, Mark. You know, I'm still a fan of music.
Right.
I still listen to music loud in my car. I still genuinely enjoy playing and writing with Aaron. Aaron's a great songwriter, great guitar player, and again, he needs to get a lot of credit for some of these songs. He co-wrote these songs, these newer ones, the Hollingsworth Session, Court. You know, he even did Court Order. Court Order is an instrumental track on my record, and he wrote it.
Right.
Well, why did I put somebody else's song on there? Well, there were supposed to be lyrics originally to that music, but it wound up ruining the song, so we pulled them. And again, he deserves a ton of credit, but sorry for that long-winded answer, but yes, an incredible amount of freedom, and I'm not planning on deviating from this path at all anytime in the near future.
Now, do you think you and Aaron will get out on the road to do acoustic sets and promote the record? Is that in
we will.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yes. Come March, we're going to, Mark, it's got to make sense in every single way, including financially. So Europe, there's a bigger market where we're able to go over there and tour and not go broke doing it. When you have two kids, it's got to make sense in every single way. I get a lot of comments and criticism. Why don't I tour in the States? Well, I can't. I have to pay to play.
Right.
And by any means, am I rich? And so it doesn't make sense. So, but yet we still want to tour. You know, I'm not making millions of dollars, you know, and hundreds or tens of thousands of dollars with even a European tour. But at least it does make a little bit more sense to go over there and help support it. And plus, there's a market for it over here.
Mm-hmm.
Here, even in my hometown, I'd be lucky to get 10 people.
Right.
You know, so it just makes more sense. So we're going to go over to Europe in March, and then we're going to go back over in April with the full band and test out some of these newer songs that we're writing for the new electric record, and we're going to take it from there.
Cool. One last question for you, John. With Caius, you guys put out a bunch of records and you toured and you worked hard on what you were doing back then, but it seems like the legend of Caius and the popularity of the band really seemed to grow after the band had stopped existing. Yeah, broke up. And I guess my question to you is, how does that make you feel? Is that something that is like, well, awesome, finally people are catching on to it? Or was it frustrating being that it took people a long time to kind of come to the Caius, and you guys weren't even around after you know, people started really, really raving about you guys?
Like, where were all these fucking people when we were together type of attitude? And I have thought about that. But, you know, it's like, I think it's more of, I don't know, there's some different views, but if a Frank Kozik poster goes out of print, I think it becomes more valuable and people really want that piece. So it's almost like that, but I'm appreciative of the fact that kids are still passing, what used to be tapes, but now MP3s or records now. They're still handing that stuff down. Hey, have you heard this band? Have you heard this band? And I certainly still do that to this day. Hey, trip out on this band. Have you heard this song from Sugartooth? I didn't know it was on a B-side and Caius was lucky enough to be still kind of thrown around and passed around via MP3 or CDs or records. And I I'm very lucky and very appreciative to the fact that people still dig that music, and I'll always be known for the singer Caius. I know that, and I'm again very appreciative of and just grateful and really blessed by having been part of that band, especially when Brent and Josh were together as a writing force. That was really cool to see those two guys working together. That was the special part for me and Caius, seeing those two guys in Josh's bedroom or in Brent's bedroom really working things out. That was special. Wow. To be a part of that, I'm super grateful.
Awesome. Great stuff. John, it's been great talking with you. And again, the new record, The Coyote Who Spoke in Tongues, it'll most likely be out by the time we have this posted on the website. So to the listeners, please go check it out. We'll have links up in today's show notes where you can go purchase it and download it on Amazon.com. And John, have a great afternoon. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Have a great evening.
Best of luck.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, man.
Kylie by John Garcia. That is off the new acoustic record, which again is called The Coyote Who Spoke in Tongues. Check that out. It'll be out in just a couple days, so definitely go buy it. We'll have it linked through today's show notes on talkingmetal.com. And yeah, we'll end things here with a email. Hey, Mark, I just wanted to let you know I'm a big fan all the way from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work. If I may, I would like to request a song to be played at one of the episodes. It's from a really underground progressive metal band from Brazil. The guys are all virtuosos, and the production is just unbelievable. The song is Brutal Behavior from the band Jack the Joker. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. It's from their second album, Mors Volta, one of my favorites of 2016. Hope you and the listeners like it. Cheers from Milton. Hey, Milton. Greetings. Hope all's well down there in Brazil. Let me just pop on to iTunes and make sure I can actually buy this tune and play it for you guys. Jack the Joker. Let's check this out. I don't know this band, so I'm kind of anxious to hear this myself. Oh, here we go. In the Rabbit Hole. In the Rabbit Hole by Jack the Joker is a record that came out in 2014. Oh, here we go. Mors Volta came out in 2016, and Brutal Behavior, here it is. I'm downloading it right now, and we're going to end today's episode with this. This will be my first time hearing it right along with you guys. Let's check it out right now. A little Jack the Joker here on Talking Metal.
For free, it's not exactly easy. And even sacrifice my life getting soon. Show me the great game. I've been stuck about decade, thanks to my goodness, treating you within a lot of praise. That's a wrong business. This is a
shit.